Welcome to the Logan River Academy Parent Podcast, the place where connection meets growth. Here, we're not just raising awareness, we're raising the bar. Whether you're navigating the challenges of residential treatment or celebrating the wins, big or small, this is your space to learn, reflect, and grow right alongside us. So buckle up, take a breath, and let's dive into real conversations, expert insights, and meaningful support for the journey ahead.
Okay, let's peel back the curtain today on something really fundamental for understanding young people on the autism spectrum. I'm talking about sensory challenges.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, for a long time, the official focus was so narrow. Just social stuff, communication.
Right, but now we know, I mean, it's actually a core required feature since what? The DSM-5 in 2013, atypical sensory processing?
Exactly. It's finally recognized as central.
So, our mission today for you listening is to try and cut through some of that complexity. We hear sensory processing disorder, SPD, thrown around. Mm-hmm. We want to give you a clearer picture of the two main patterns. Hypersensitivity when the world is just too much, and hyposensitivity when it's, well, not enough.
And I think, you know, getting into the why behind it is so important. This isn't just about preferences or behavior. There's a real physiological basis.
Okay, so biology. What's the key idea there?
Well, the crucial concept is something called impaired sensory gating.
Sensory gating.
Okay.
Yeah, think of it like your brain's bouncer.
Right.
It's supposed to filter out all the background noise, the hum of the lights, the feel of your clothes, traffic outside, stuff that isn't immediately important.
Makes sense.
But for many youth with these challenges, that bouncer is maybe letting too much through. It gets overwhelmed. And everything floods in.
Okay. So that's what leads to sensory overload, just too much input hitting the brain at once.
Precisely. It's an unfiltered flood. And we actually have solid neurological evidence for this.
Oh, really? Like what?
Neuroimaging studies, for example, show decreased connectivity in the brain regions that handle sensory information. The pathways aren't as efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And on a smaller scale, at the neurotransmitter level, we see imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
Things like GABA and glutamate.
Okay, GABA and glutamate. I've heard of the EI imbalance excitatory inhibitory. That sounds pretty technical. What does that actually feel like for someone?
Yeah, good question. Essentially, think of glutamate as the brain's accelerator and GABA as the brake. If that balance is off, the brain has trouble modulating signals. It's either revving too high or not getting enough go. It struggles to find that middle ground.
So that intense reaction a child might have to, say, a loud noise or a scratchy tag.
Exactly. The aha moment here is realizing that's not deliberate misbehavior. It's an involuntary biological response. Their system is genuinely overwhelmed or understimulated.
That completely shifts the perspective, doesn't it? From managing behavior to providing support.
It has to. It removes that element of blame or choice. It's about accommodation.
Okay. So we've established the biological why this impaired gating, the EI imbalance. Now, how does this manifest? Let's get into those opposites you mentioned, starting with hypersensitivity.
Right.
Over-responsivity.
Right. This is where the world feels overwhelming, assaulting the senses.
And the examples are often quite striking, aren't they? Like sounds, a siren, a vacuum cleaner. Not just annoying, but physically painful. You see kids instantly cover their ears.
Absolutely. Or tactile defensiveness. That's a big one. Refusing clothes with tags or seams because that slight texture feels intensely irritating, almost like, you know, sandpaper.
Wow. And the sources point out this constant state of being overwhelmed, constantly coping.
Mm-hmm.
It leads directly to significant anxiety, right? Like it doubles the chances.
It does. Yes. The link between sensory overresponsivity and anxiety is very strong. It's exhausting to constantly be on guard against sensory assault.
Okay, so that's one side. What about the flip side? Hyposensitivity or underresponsivity?
So here, the world is sort of underwhelming. The brain isn't getting enough input or isn't registering it properly.
What does that look like?
It can be varied. Maybe reduced awareness of pain or temperature. They might not notice a scrape or feel the cold as much. Or they might seem tuned out, not responding to their name being called.
And this often leads to that sensation-seeking behavior we hear about.
Exactly. It's often a subconscious drive to get the input the nervous system is craving. It's an attempt at self-regulation, really.
So that's the crashing into things, the really tight hugs, roughhousing.
Yes, seeking that deep pressure input. Or vestibular-seeking things like spinning and spinning without getting dizzy. They're trying to feed their nervous system the intense input it needs to feel organized.
Okay, but wait. This brings up a point. If someone is, say, hypersensitive to sounds but seeking deep pressure, How do you manage that? It sounds quite complex, that mixed profile.
It absolutely is complex, and that's why intervention has to be individualized. There's no one-size-fits-all.
So what are the key strategies then, professionally?
The primary go-to is occupational therapy, OT. OTs often use what's called sensory integration therapy, or SIT.
SIT, okay.
And SIT isn't just about playing. It's a specific therapeutic approach designed to help the child's nervous system better organize and process sensory information over time.
Gotcha. And for parents, caregivers, educators, what's a practical, proactive strategy they can use day to day?
The sensory diet is probably the most powerful tool here.
Like a food diet, but for senses.
Precisely. It's a personalized schedule of specific sensory activities woven throughout the day. The goal is to provide regular, predictable, organizing input to help the nervous system stay regulated.
Can you give an example of what might be on a sensory diet?
Sure. We often focus on calming, organizing proprioceptive input that's input to the muscles and joints about body position. So activities like jumping on a mini trampoline, doing wall push-ups, maybe carrying a stack of books, things that give that deep feedback.
Right. Things that ground them. And what about just changing the environment itself? Simple accommodations.
Oh, absolutely crucial. And often quite simple. Things like providing noise-canceling headphones during assemblies or in loud cafeterias.
Yeah.
Switching harsh fluorescent lighting for softer, maybe natural spectrum bulbs. Offering fidget tools or alternative seating options like wobble stools or therapy balls can make a huge difference too.
Okay, so we have the brain science, the two main patterns, hyper and hypo, and then these practical tools. OT, the sensory diet, environmental tweaks. It really underscores that individualization is key. So to wrap this up, here's something provocative for you to think about based on the research. There's growing evidence suggesting that these sensory difficulties might actually show up before the social challenges we typically associate with ASD. They might even predict them.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important point.
So think about it. If a brain is fundamentally struggling just to process basic sensory information, sounds, sights, touch, how equipped is it really to navigate the incredibly complex, fast-paced world of social cues? Reading body language, making eye contact, interpreting tone.
It follows logically, doesn't it?
It does. So the question to leave you with is, what does this imply about where we should focus our efforts? Does it suggest we need to address the sensory foundation first, create that regulated baseline before we can effectively even begin to work on social skills? Something to chew on.
Thanks for joining us on the Logan River Academy Parent Podcast. Keep growing. Keep connecting, and remember, you're not in this alone. Until next time, take care.